Let's start with our November board meeting, and we're going to start with insurance. Over to Andrea.
Okay, so agenda paper two. Last month, you had a non-decision-making session on the concerns and implementation challenges relating to the implementation of IFRS 17, and we set criteria for considering whether to explore possible amendments to IFRS 17. We're expecting that in December, we'll ask you to decide whether to explore amendments to IFRS 17. So today, what we're asking is for you to consider the implications of exploring amendments to IFRS 17 on the mandatory effective date. This means that what we're essentially asking you to do today is to consider a topic that some might expect should really come later, once you'd already decided whether, and if so, what changes you might propose. But the reason for bringing this paper now is that we've heard feedback from many stakeholders that it would be useful for them to understand sooner rather than later if the board were going to amend the effective date of IFRS 17, for example, for their business planning and budgeting processes. So we note that the meeting in October already means that there is some uncertainty about whether the board is going to make amendments that could disrupt the progress of preparers in implementing IFRS 17, and that that might lead to the need to amend the effective date. And we note that this disruption could exist even if the amendment served to ease implementation, or even if the board at a later stage decides that not to proceed with any amendments that it might have proposed in the meantime. So that's why at this early stage we want to discuss the implications for effective dates if we're to explore those amendments. So the paper is in two parts. It considers separately whether the mandatory effective date of IFRS 17 should be deferred by 1 year so that entities would be required to apply IFRS 17 for annual periods beginning on or after the 1st of January 2022. And separately, whether if the board were to do that, it should also amend the fixed expiry date for the temporary exemption to IFRS 9 that's in IFRS 4 today, so that all entities must apply IFRS 9 for annual periods beginning on or after 1 January 2022. And the rationale for any deferral would be that the board's recent discussions could create uncertainty around the effective date. So before I pass over for your discussion, I'd also like to note that we've heard from a number of stakeholders in recent weeks and months that they would prefer a two-year deferral to IFRS 17, not the 1 year that I'm talking about here. But we've also heard from other stakeholders that any deferral of more than 1 year is likely to disrupt their implementation processes. So to meet the board's criteria that you set last month, that any amendment should not unduly disrupt implementation already underway or risk undue delays in the effective date of a needed standard, the staff discussion in this paper assumes that any deferral would be limited to 1 year to minimize that disruption. So with that, I'll hand over for your discussion.
Amaru.
Thanks, Hans. Thank you for the paper. And I think this is a very important issue. And the expectations of outsiders about implementation of such an important standard should be clarified, the sooner the better. First of all. So among the concerns of an implementation challenge, to be honest, none of the reasons that you listed in paragraph 11 were compelling enough to me. I don't agree with any of them. I think those are natural reasons in any standard that really impose significant challenge in a particular industry like that. So I was not compelled by any of those. However, I was compelled with the case we had in IFRS 15. I think when we approve a standard that is significantly complex to an industry that never had an IFRS for this particular type of activities, of course, there are issues that we might not envisage completely when basing our decision. I think last month's discussion, I agreed with the way you assessed at inception the points that might need to be taken care of in an additional amendment to the standard. And I think this will naturally consider our due process and the need for us to understand thoroughly the issues and the relationship with them, with the final implementation efforts. This caused me to pause and think that postponing the implementation date is something that is reasonable. So I accepted the possibility, following strictly the language in the question. If I think that it should be deferred, I think it should be deferred at this stage because of all the issues that we envisage will need to assess to a potential amendment. But I wouldn't go further than 1 year. I think 1 year would provide a balance to me in terms of my initial expectations about the implementation date of the original IFRS 17 and considering the necessary amendments that we envisage at this stage. So that said, I think we should aim to achieve quality and completeness when it comes to implementing such an important standard to a particularly complex time of business. So that said, and based on our previous experience in IFRS 15 with different but similar in few aspects, I do agree with your question one that should be deferred by 1 year and no more than 1 year.
Thank you. The suggestion in question one is quite understandable after thinking about all the feedback we had before. But one concern is, as Amaro said in the paragraph 11E, I'm wondering whether the word will initially apply IFRS 17 at the same time, now by considering the EU endorsement process. So I'm saying your 1 year deferral might be enough for them to complete that EU endorsement process, so we can start applying 17 at the same time in the world. That's a very critical thing for non-EU countries to think about the possibility of the application of 17.
Okay, so shall I respond? Yeah. Okay, I think because we're looking at this in terms of what we do, what the EU does is not something within our control. I think we need to think about the effective date, and we take into account a lot of different things when we did it. We took into account the need for different jurisdictions to do whatever processes they need to get IFRS 17 effective when we set the original effective date. The EU, like everyone else, will have a total of 4.5 years to get IFRS 17 ready. So it just comes down to whether you think that's enough.
Doug.
Thank you. I agree with staff's recommendation, and I agree with the deferral of IFRS 9 as well. But one question is, do you think we need to defer even if we do not amend the IFRS 17 at all? I mean, what if we decided that we are not going to amend IFRS 17 at all last month? Did you propose to defer 1 year or so? Is that your assessment?
I think what we discussed in October has already been discussed, and we have a plan to bring a decision to you in December as well. So that will happen in December, regardless of how it might have been had we not done that. I think given that we're in this process, the paper responds to the uncertainty created by that process.
Okay.
And so that's why we're proposing the deferral.
So the reason is uncertainty, because there is an uncertainty about amendment. Therefore, we have to decide it now. That is the reason why you brought
it. That's why we brought the paper now. Okay. And I think we may resolve that uncertainty sooner rather than later, but equally the uncertainty could persist for a number of months beyond if we were to go down a process, because we could still issue an exposure draft and not make any changes. I think it'd be quite unfair to our stakeholders if we suddenly turned around after an exposure draft and said, we're not changing it, and by the way, let's have that year
back. Okay, good.
It comes back to Andrea's tee-up as well.
Yeah.
Andrea made the point in the tee-up, which I agree with. It's pretty unusual.
Yeah.
The first question we're being asked is, do you agree with a one-year deferral when we don't even know yet if we're going to amend anything in the scope of what we amend?
Yeah.
But I think people who are really doing the right thing and putting all their energies into implementation are rightly saying, we really need help with a clear steer on timing, because we're making really important budgeting decisions, decisions on how we implement.
Okay.
And I think for those people, it's only fair for us to say, as soon as we can, which is why we're asking today, do you agree with a one-year deferral?
Yeah.
So I think then that's a decision we're being asked to make independent of subsequent decisions on amendments.
Okay. And the second question is about the meaning of 1 year. Actually, Andrea already said we have decided that we are not going to disrupt those who have prepared. Therefore, if we defer more than 1 year, that may disrupt those who have started preparation. So therefore, our amendment would be restricted by the decision we are going to make this month about 1 year. That means we are not going to extend our deferral period, no matter what the decision of amendment is all about. So that means, if I say it the other way around, our amendment is heavily restricted by the decision of this month about 1 year. Is my understanding correct?
Potentially. I think at the last meeting, you already decided that you didn't want to disrupt implementation. I think what we're seeing in this month is we're providing a little bit more colour around what we mean by not disrupting implementation and some of the consequences of that criteria.
Okay, clear. Thank you.
Martin.
Yeah, I also agree that we should defer effective date by 1 year. And why 1 year only? Because, man, I think, first, okay, companies need certainty, okay, about what is the effective date, because we heard that the cost to implement IFRS 17 are very high. Some people said, okay, by individual entities, they have up to 500 million for implementation of this standard. So I think in this kind of big project, you need certainty, okay, by when you have to finish this project. And I think this certainty we have to give now, and we cannot wait until we have debated the issues which we started to debate last month. So I think we have to do it now. I think only 1 year, because I'm also convinced that then people have time to implement the standard from when we have finalized IFRS 17, which then to the effective date, which is then 2021-22, is 4.5 years. And I'm really convinced that if you have an accounting project which you cannot do by 4.5 years, you cannot also not do by 5.5 years and 6.5 years. And that is what I'm really convinced on. And therefore, I think people said, okay, some people need more time, okay, then give them 1 year. But also, I think it is linked, I think, to the second question in the staff paper, which is really IFRS 9. I think when we decided earlier, okay, that we should then link the effective date for insurance companies between 9 and 17, I think there was good arguments, and these arguments has not changed. Therefore, I think we have to align it, but this also means, okay, that we have to defer 9 for some entities even a year longer. And at the time when we made the decision, we were quite clear that we find it very difficult that banks and other companies have to implement 9 and provide it all the information, but the insurance industry not. So we were convinced that we can do it, but only for a short period of time and not forever. And therefore, I think, okay, also I think not to defer an effective date of 17 would mean also defer an effective date of 9, I think no longer than 1 year is appropriate, because then I think then insurance companies have to implement 9 or report on 9 only in 2021, which is then maybe 4 years after the banks have done it. And there was a lot of talk at that time of competitive advantage, disadvantage, and we have to also consider that. So I think on balance with all the arguments, I think 1 year we should do now and we should decide today, because certainty, I think, plays a big role.
Yan Zhao.
Thank you, Hans. For first question, I agree with staff's recommendation. I think it is a pragmatic solution to current situation. I agree with Martin's point that currently stakeholders need certainty with regard to the effective date of IFRS 17. So I think it's better for the board to make decision earlier than later. And also I agree with Amaro's point that it's a good balance of the views we collected. Some stakeholders would like to defer the IFRS 17 longer, maybe 2 years. Some don't want to defer any time or 1 year acceptable. So it's a good balance. And secondly, I Tuck said that whether we are going to make some amendment to IFRS 17, board has not yet decided, but maybe no amendments or maybe some amendments. But whatever, we have collected those issues, we have decided where we'll go through those issues, whether they meet the criteria. So all these things take time to complete those process. So I think 1 year deeper is acceptable. So I agree with this point. So with regard to question two, so we discussed question, okay, together. Question two, actually, I think it's a very difficult question to answer, because for me, in the one hand, it has been deferred for 3 years. And actually, we have given this company totally 7 years to prepare to implement IFRS 9. So I think it's a little bit abnormal with regard to the IFRS standards, give so long a time to prepare adoption IFRS 9. So this is first reason. Secondly, the criteria we agreed last month is that any change should not result in significant loss of useful information to users. One thing I worry about that about the compatibility concerns, because some companies already implement IFRS 9 since January 1st this year, but for those insurance companies, they will be delayed further. So there is a compatibility concerns will come out. And the third is that although implement IFRS 9 and IFRS 7 together, there are some benefits there, but there is also huge work for the companies to implement those two big standards at the same time. I think those companies will face a very significant changes at one day. So this is one hand. I'm actually from my heart, I think it's better not to differ. But on the other hand, I'm also have sympathy for those companies, for those insurance companies, already have planned to implement IFRS 9 and IFRS 17 together. And also, there's some concern about the asset and the liability mismatching and the resulting some volatilities of incomes. So considering all of those, I will not oppose the staff recommendation, but I'm thinking about the wording, because we say that all entities must apply IFRS 9 for any period beginning on or after 1 January 2022. I'm thinking whether we can also, whether we can also convene a signal or send a message that our intention actually still would like to encourage those entities to earlier application IFRS 9. If even some companies already prepare everything, so we still should encourage those companies to apply you know, IFRS 9 not defer 1 year late if they can do that. So this is,
So the amendment to IFRS 4 that gave both the overlay approach and the temporary exemption from IFRS 9 was structured in a way that meant that IFRS 9 can be applied if a company wants to apply IFRS 9. It just doesn't take the optional temporary exemption from IFRS 9. And in addition, at the time, we were troubled by the comparability between companies that applied IFRS 9 and companies that didn't. And so there are disclosures which were designed to try and increase that comparability, albeit they are not exactly the same information you would get from applying IFRS 9, but it was disclosures that were developed to develop a balance between providing that comparable information, mostly around the fair value of assets, and the sort of practical concerns about running two systems for financial assets at the same time.
Sure.
I'm going to link the two questions as well, so I'm going to break the rules. But I'm, with a heavy heart, supportive of the staff's recommendation that we defer IFRS 17 by 1 year, but I think that it's really important that we are clear for the reasons why we have made that decision and the reasons that weren't important to us. And I do worry about some of the reasons set out in paragraph 11 because they're not the reasons I'm deferring. And I think we really need to be careful with that signalling because I've already had a couple of stakeholders come up and tell me with confidence that I'm going to vote for deferral for reasons I don't agree with. And so I think we need to be very careful with our messaging. And even though it's unusual to ask us now for a specific timing of the deferral of 1 year, I think that's a really important signal, both from the preparer's side, so they've got certainty for planning. Also, I think for the board, because I think it will remind us that we need to be disciplined in our decision-making. So we need to be pragmatic. We need to be trying to do things quickly and not go down every rabbit hole, because it's important that we get this done and we get it done efficiently. I think it's also a really important signal to the market that it's not going to be a long deferral, so they shouldn't stop implementation. They should continue with implementation and get some confidence from the fact that we've said 1 year that means we are really going to be true to our criteria, which is really tinkering around the fringes rather than opening fundamental things. I think that's a really important signal as well, having the 1 year. And the other reason why, for me, the 1 year is really important is that even though every time we vote to defer IFRS 9 for anybody, a little piece of me dies inside, I am supportive of keeping the alignment between 9 and 17, but with a very heavy heart. I'm supportive of it because the reasons ultimately that people convinced me of when we did the deferral for insurers still hold for me, and for me that was mainly around classification and measurement and the timing, the potential for mismatches and the alignment between the application of classification and measurement and IFRS 9. But my logic would have been slightly different to the board paper. I think one of the reasons for me that I'm agreeing to a 1 year deferral of 17 is because I think it's good and important to keep the link between the dates of 9 and 17. I'd agree with Jing Chow, if people want to apply 9 earlier, that's great, but I don't think we should impose it upon them. But I would not be receptive of any deferral of 9 by more than 1 year. So that's why, for me, a deferral of 17 of 1 year is something I can agree to so we can keep the link with 9. But I'd be really against a deferral of longer than 1 year for IFRS 9, a further deferral of 1 year for IFRS 9, because going back and rereading our rationale, but also the disclosure that you mentioned recently, Andrea, we took a really light touch with the disclosure requirements on the insurers that defer 9. We tried to really, really get a fine balance between just giving enough to users that we could sort of hold our heads up, but it was done in a way that there's very little information provided about expected credit losses. And we're hearing at the moment that there's a decrease in the quality of assets being held by insurers around the world in the chase for yield. So this gap in the ECL information, I think, is something we can't be blind to. And we just don't have that at the moment with the deferrers. They give us information about credit risk concentrations and some information about fair values for things that are low credit risk, but not ECL information. And it's a massive mismatch between what we require of the banks and the insurers. And I think we create risks that there will be incentives for banks to sell lower quality assets to insurers, which is in the market's interests. So I think it's really important to keep the link, but I think it needs to be a one-year deferral because of that link to IFRS 9.
Gary, you, it, I guess grudgingly I can buy into deferring this for a year, but the reality is I really don't like it. I mean, I don't actually agree with any of the reasons in paragraph 11. But where I do come around is, one, is I'm not blind to what other people are saying, but two, through the first several months of next year, we're going to explore changes. I mean, betting guess and my thing, I have no idea what will come out, but something will come, and then you go to the due process steps and the normal 120-day comment period. So it gives uncertainty as to where it's going to be. So I don't think that's fair to the constituents in it. The I say don't fully buy into the need to do it, but I sort of, you know, listen to the input. But also, since we're going to go back into the standard and maybe nothing comes out of it, but it's going to be months before that's known. So I think we can get into there. I would, you know, point out in paragraph 12 here, which is, we need to keep in mind, there's a lot of people who are not asking for this, expressly asking us not to open it. And there's at least as many as them as there are asking for 2 years. I mean, my, you know, simple addition on that. But I would say a one-year delay is sort of, I guess, a pragmatic answer, given that we're going to go into the standard. And I think beyond that, if you go 2 years or whatever, I think it does get disruptive. It does increase costs. And having been a participant in budgetary wars, I mean, the reality is in the very biggest companies, in about 2 or 3 months, you're going to start doing your 2020 budgets. It's, and when you have long-lived projects, you tend to think beyond the immediate year. It's not just a current operating budget. It's a capital budget for these things. So I think if you go out 2 years or more, that's too far out. It loses interest, because when you're budgeting particularly big IT stuff, you're competing with all sorts of priorities. If all of a sudden something gets 2 extra years, there's going to be plenty of people looking to fill in the void in the short term, you know, for reasons that are internally important. So I'll break, so I'll get there on that vote. I think on the second question, since we seem to be talking both together, actually, I don't agree. I think we should separate 9 and 17. Mm-hmm. And for a number of reasons, first of all, if we delay it, that'll be about eight years, you know, since IFRS 9 was written. A lot's happened to the financial markets in the last 8 years. And do we want to wait another 4 or 5 years before the effects or the benefits of IFRS 9 felt in the financial statements? And I think when you look at the reasons why we deferred, you know, 9, it wasn't for everybody in the insurance industry. There's plenty of insurance companies that the underlying reasons for 4, 9, and 7 together don't apply. And even in companies where some of the reasons apply, it does not necessarily apply in the entire book of business. It applies in lines of business, not the total. And, you know, at some point you got to say enough, you know, is enough. The other thing is, I said this, you know, 2 or 3 years ago when we were doing the projects for 4 and 9, is I actually think there's benefits to the user community of separating 9 and 17. Is you can isolate the effects of 9, and then later on you can see what the isolated effects of 17 are. If you put two big standards together, too much stuff gets netted and offset, you know, in terms of the analysis, the available information. So I actually think there is some investor benefit to separating it.
Well, for many reasons that have already been expressed, I support the staff recommendation of differing the effective date of 1 year. And I really emphasize that, to me, that 1 year is consistent with the criteria that we've approved last month. So if I would expect that if those criteria are met, the 1 year delay is sufficient. On the second question, to me, I think the reasons that existed, as you has said, for the default at the time it was decided, are still valid, and they play a great role in my support for differing also IFRS 9. But I think differing IFRS 9 is also consistent with the criteria that we've set of not disrupting implementation projects. And those companies that have opted for the deferral, they have made their plans, their implementation plans, taking into account the fact that they would implement both standards at the same time. So I think if we were changing the conditions in which they should now implement, we would not be inconsistent with our own criterion of not disrupting implementation.
Mary.
And in respect of question one, echoing many of the comments from other board members, I think we have to consider it now versus when we might normally consider it in another project. Once we raised the prospect last month of considering possible changes, but again, I think important that we message that we are exposing a proposal. We will be exposing a proposal to defer. It's not unilateral action by us. That proposal is not conditioned on us deciding to propose or finalize amendments. We're making a decision because of the uncertainty that we're creating and the reasons for doing it not being the ones laid out in paragraph 11, but rather addressing the uncertainty that we realistically acknowledge is created by trying to respond to implementation issues, and that are reinforcing the idea that our efforts to address those implementation issues will be targeted and narrow rather than re-deliberation of any fundamental concepts in the standard. I think Sue raised some very good points in terms of question two, which is really what was more the focus of my comments and keeping the link. But I think those comments are maybe stronger in my understanding with respect to the classification and measurement portion of IFRS 9 rather than the expected credit loss portion. In paragraph 29B of paper 2, you set out, you flag up the concern about expected credit loss, and that was something Sue touched on in terms of missing the information. I was looking quickly at what the disclosure requirements were that we put in there, put in the deferral related to ECL. And I think if we decide that we are going to also propose deferring the effective date of IFRS 9 by 1 year, we should look at proposing to amend the disclosure requirements related to ECL, the application of the ECL part, because I think there is less risk of costs of kind of redo related to the ECL part of IFRS 9 as opposed to the classification measurement. I think with classification and measurement, there's some arguments made at the time that if we made people go through and do a, application of IFRS 9 in order to make the full disclosure, that they would end up having to reassess some of those classifications in light of the adoption, the change for IFRS 17. But I think with respect to the expected credit loss portion, the systems, processes, models, evaluations that they have to do are going to have to be done repeatedly anyway, and they need to build those systems and have experience. So I think we should look at maybe more robust disclosure requirements related to that last extended year if we decide to go ahead with that. So I'm not asking for a decision on that today, but I would ask the staff to go back and look at the disclosure requirements and see if we decide to propose saying if you take this deferral, then you have to basically ramp up and put the full ECL information in the footnotes for that last year in which you were previously expecting to apply IFRS 9. I'd say come back.
Sure. We can look at into the feasibility. I will just comment that one of the factors in not requiring that the first time round was also to do with the fact that although it's not a matter of redo, a company that was deferring would have to do the IAS 39 impairment, and we thought at the time that doing both impairment models at the same time was unduly burdensome for companies. But we can look into the feasibility and come back.
I can see it being maybe more burdensome to have to do it for 3 years in a dual run than for 1 year. The period you thought you were going to have to apply it anyway.
Nick?
Thank you. Like others have said, I think it's very important that we give certainty today in terms of the timing, irrespective of whether we make any amendments or not. In terms of our preparer stakeholders, I found a variety of things in terms of how long a deferral should be. But please, let's not forget we have user stakeholders as well. We only seem to be talking about preparer stakeholders, and users are incredibly frustrated by the suggestion of any further delay to the standard. I don't agree with all the reasons set out in paragraph 11, which again aren't our views, but the views of some of our stakeholders as why deferral should be appropriate and the effective date. But I think there are other reasons why we should, and I think pragmatically, on balance, I would support a one-year deferral as proposed by the staff. In terms of the second question, again, I hear what Gary says in terms of isolating the separate impacts of the two standards. My sense is, on balance, users would prefer to see this package as one set of restatements rather than disruption 2 consecutive years from this. So again, I would support the staff recommendation in terms of IFRS 9.
Darrell.
So a lot has been said. One of the things I wanted to emphasize is the point that users are asking for the standard as soon as possible, and I think that's important to report. I support both of the views that both of the questions staff have recommended to us. I support the IFRS 17 for the reasons that others have discussed. I have the same issues around paragraph 11, so I won't repeat those. I also support where staff have landed on IFRS 9, but again, subject to many of the same reservations that have gone around the table. Zhenxia raised the point at the first instance in suggesting that we could try to encourage early adoption of IFRS 9. Now, I think encouraged requirements never work. But I think a lot of the arguments that he used about the fact that this information is available, there's not the same level of uncertainty, and et cetera, are valid. Sue raised the point about, Sue and others, I think Francois as well, raised the point that we had previously said that there is some importance in these two standards being adopted at the same time. And I think Nick, your point was taken from the user perspective. All of that leads me to something that sort of has come to me while this discussion has been going around the table. So given that Mary's now asked staff to go away and do something, I'd like to also ask staff to think about something. As I understand it at the moment, IFRS 9 for insurance companies retains the option of not presenting comparators. And I wonder if we shouldn't actually require comparators now for the 21 year, if we're going to have that for the 17 as well. But I haven't thought through the implications of it, and I would just say that's something to think about, not to actually do.
Could I just send a word of warning?
Let us also be careful with asking the staff to work on two standards at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, this is playing with fire here.
We want to do things quickly, which may mean that we don't explore every avenue.
Yeah. Yes. Martin?
And on this new task to the staff, I'm a little bit concerned with that because I think the staff has really to work on the December paper and on the potential amendments which we do, and not doing it again and again work, I think, which we had already done, because when we decided on the deferral of 17, I think we had good arguments that we should align with 9, and also my disclosure is, because there was also an argument at that point in time, you don't know which asset you classify maybe as at cost or fair value through OCI, because for this kind of asset, maybe you have to deliver in the future then expected credit loss, but for the fair value asset, you don't have. Mm-hmm. And that was also a good argument. Why to develop a kind of model for assets which you maybe decide when you adopt 17, you account for fair value through P&L and don't have to provide all this information. So I understand that task to the staff, but I would really encourage that we don't spend too much time and concentrate really on the issues, I think, which we decided last month we should bring forward. Because that was, I think, also to bring it in a short period of time. We decide today for 1 year, so it should not really...
I was hoping 1 year was going to make us disciplined.
Yeah.
Disciplined. I guess just as a reassurance, when you... did think quite hard about what information would be available and what the comparability of information would be when we deferred IFRS 9 for 3.5 years, or 3 years. I think all the thought that we put into that would be equally valid for an additional year, which is a relatively shorter time than what we were thinking about when we thought about all of this.
Tom?
Sorry, it's a bit awkward. I'm sort of toward the end, and actually I have questions first rather than comments. Nevertheless, I'm going to ask them. It goes a little bit to Andrea's comment that normally you would do this at the end when you had full information. So I want to just add a tiny bit of information for myself. So at present, the transition says early adoption is permitted basically so long as IFRS 9 and 15 are in place. Is that right?
Yes.
And is there any intention to change that?
No, but it's not going to be relevant for 15 because it will. Yeah,
15 is already in
effect. Yes or no's will, like, okay, if it was fine, so we move along. So if that's the case, if we contemplate some adjustments, are we contemplating any adjustments that would preempt someone going early in that set that you're evaluating?
No, I don't think anything we were looking at would.
Okay, that's helpful for me anyway. Second one, with respect to the set of contemplated adjustments that we've got, and you've got sort of an idea of how many there might be, could you give me a range, depending on how many we choose to go after, for how long it will take from the day we start this to the day that they're all done?
Well, you can never tell because we have to go out to consultation.
That's why I'm asking for a range. You can make it wider or narrower. I'm not asking you for a date.
Okay, well, I'll give you what my expected. I would hope that we would be able to wind everything up within a period of a year plus or minus 6 months.
Okay.
In terms of how long it could take, I would remind you that we had a targeted ED of in 2013, which we finalized in 2017.
So if we start January 1, for the sake of argument, we could be done June 30th, 2020.
Why don't we focus on our deliberations to decide what's in an ED, rather than...
I just wanted to get a sense of this timing issue. So that's why they're in. So let me just kind of carry on with my other questions. My understanding is that, and again, just make sure I've got this right, is for the European entities, they apply IFRS as approved by the European Commission. And they don't have an option of doing an IFRS exclusive of what the European Commission's approved?
Well, there's two things there. I think one of the unique thing about IFRS 17 is that it supersedes IFRS 4. And IFRS 4 is quite encompassing as to what it allows.
Yeah.
It allows you to change your accounting policies provided it's more relevant or more reliable. I think it would be hard to argue that the standard we've issued does not constitute more relevant and more reliable information.
Okay. I've had other people take different. So you think that they could actually go on their own?
I think it's an avenue worth exploring if they wanted to do
okay.
that.
Okay. So... Because I went back then, because I'm a bit worried about this timing thing. So EFRAG sent us a request to consider some issues, and we rolled those issues into the other issues we had in terms of what we're choosing. And my understanding is that they've got kind of a 0-1 kind of if we explore or not, and I may have this wrong, but... My understanding is that if we choose not to explore any issues, they just pick up the endorsement process and carry on. But that if we pick up issues, they're going to suspend. Is that correct?
Well, listen, that is their responsibility.
Yeah.
We have our own responsibility.
Yeah, but I want to understand this one. I'm trying to understand.
We have no control over the European endorsement process, so we cannot take that into account either.
And EFRAG is only one part of the European endorsement process.
My understanding is, I'm trying to understand a sense a little bit about why we're looking at, why 1 year is the right number. That's all I'm trying to do, is that I'm just trying to kind of get a sense of 1 year. So if the view is that whatever Europe does, they do, then we're just back to the rest of the universe?
This is complicated as enough as it is. We cannot,
well,
you know,
I guess it, what I'm basically kind of on the 1 year is what I'm trying to just understand, is 1 year exactly the right amount? Because that was the one part that I didn't fully, which is why I asked. So let me maybe come back with a couple of comments then. With respect, I think Gary said that we had equal numbers of people who had the 1 year would be expensive and whatever. I've not seen any census, so we just know, I think, that some would say it's expensive to go longer, others say that they really would like longer. With respect to that, if early transition is allowed and it's expensive for me to go longer, then can't I just go early and save myself the expense?
I think there are other considerations about adopting a new standard, which is not just whether or not I'm ready, because I think you need to look at what the rest of your competitors are doing and how the users are going to deal with that information. There's a general consensus that everyone going at the same time means the market is able to make comparisons between companies better, and then so on and so forth. So I think while you could say, yes, they could just go ahead and save the process, but they still have to deal with the aftermath of what they've reported.
So there's some other costs, but they could save themselves the implementation costs.
They'd have to live with the other costs. There will be other costs there which may not be palatable. So overall, it might be that the cost.
Okay. And then, and everybody has to live with the costs if Europe goes later.
As Hans said, I think we can't control what Europe does, and
we can't control. But if the argument is that you got to live, so our point, if those are legitimate costs, though, we're going to just try and get it right.
I think if we are also clear about our timetable, that also helps the process of endorsement elsewhere in Europe and elsewhere as well. I think it's worth remembering there are jurisdictions that have already endorsed IFRS 17, and so they need some clarity as well about what we might do.
Yeah, no, because I just try to get that one. It goes to kind of what Tak said right off the bat, is depending a little bit on what we do, and I really would not, normally if I'm doing anything, I like to put some slack in the system. And that's why I asked about the range a little bit, is if we say 1 year today and we find these things are more extensive than we thought, you know, like how far do we push back? And could we be coming back? So one question I would ask him, and a lot of people want 2 years, is it worthwhile putting some slack based on, and that was again my question about could you go early to minimize these costs?
A lot of people also want slack to be able to renegotiate the 15 points that have been introduced, or 15 points.
Okay, no, but that's why I just wanted to really get a feel for this 1 year.
In terms of slack, Tom, I think when we normally make amendments to standards, we normally allow a period of about 12 to 18 months for companies to implement the new requirements. On the various timetables that I have in mind, I'd expect that we'd be allowing a bit more than that. Now, it's not going to be 3.5 years, but it is more than the 12 to 18 months.
And I think the other important thing is that we, given the questions that have been raised and the initial staff assessment of the types of issues that they would think our criteria would lend us to investigate, they're not the types of issues that should disrupt implementation. So it's not as though people can't implement until we finalise whatever we decide to change on the standard. And I think that's really important as well.
And so
the whole point, part of the point of my signalling point on the 12 months was, I think it's important because it gives people some certainty. When we talked about the criteria and not wanting to disrupt implementation, etc., we're putting our money where our mouth is, so that we shouldn't create this sort of idea that it could be this massive, long process with an unknown end that may legitimately then mean they'll think, well, God, should I stop implementation? Am I going to waste money? So I think it's partly the year to give you some comfort. The staff have done quite careful analysis on timing, and we're confident we can get it to work from a timeline perspective, but it's very difficult to estimate that given where we are today, which is why they're not being that black and white with their answer.
So I guess the closing, so you're confident we have enough slack in the system with the January 1, 22?
If we're efficient, yes.
No, not if, but that's what I meant is...
If we're efficient, we can take 5 years deliberating nothing at this point.
No, I agree, but that's what I mean, is you're confident that we will get there, that we will be efficient.
Yes. We all have to be disciplined.
Okay. And so that kind of goes to what Tack said right off, is that whatever we do, everything has to be aimed for that. Okay.
Yes, I think whatever we do, if we make this decision, and given we've already got the criteria, I would argue that whatever we do, we already have to be aiming for that, because I think I've said it in paragraph 32 that essentially 1 year is what we think will take not to disrupt implementation for people who have already started implementation. So if we're going to be true to those criteria, it has to be no more than 1 year.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Beryl?
I just wanted to pick up on one or two points that Tom raised. I think the first one is that there are many jurisdictions where IFRS accounting forms the basis of regulatory accounting. And in those jurisdictions, the regulator is not keen on the idea of early application. And it's taken off the table for a number of entities in terms of just applying early. And then I come back to the point that Nick made, is I think a lot of the people that I've spoken to over the last couple of months, when they talk about 2 years, it's kind of of course we're going to ask for as much as we can get, because from a preparer perspective, the longer you get, the more slack you get, the better it is. But I think the slack question is where Nick's point about the particularly user requests come in. We have a responsibility to users, and that responsibility is to give them this better accounting solution as soon as we possibly can. And I think that talks to why we need to be efficient in the process, because we are providing something for that base as well. Our job is to balance the views of our different stakeholders, not just to listen to one group of stakeholders.
So it will not surprise you that I also support the staff recommendation, albeit grudgingly. And I completely agree with Martin that a period of 4.5 years, and if you take into account comparative still 3.5 years, should be enough to do a project like this. Still 3.5 years is still half a year more than what I had in the Netherlands to implement a new insurance system for the whole population, a health insurance system for the whole population, including major tax changes, including the introduction of subsidies. It was a hellish job, and because we concentrated our minds, we got it done. I am sure that companies that are as professional as insurance companies can do this in 3.5 years. And I think if you create too much slack into a process, all it leads to is sitting back, trying to lobby some more for further change, and that is not what we want. Also, the changes that we are going to consider are going to be not minimal. They will probably be substantive enough and really take into account a lot of what we heard. But we have made very clear they are not going to disrupt implementation, and they're going to lead to cost effectiveness. So they should also really help with the implementation. And I truly believe that any serious company should be able to pull this off. I'm really worried if we would say 2 years that people would start sitting back and that there's a significant risk of the whole project just derailing. That's not what we want. I agree that it should be aligned with IFRS 9, and that's another reason why we cannot have more than 1 year. It is true that the industry, in its search for yield, has been increasingly investing in risky instruments, and I would really hope that this standard is in place before the next financial crisis hits us, and I'm totally not convinced that that will be the case, even without any further delay. All in all, I can agree with the staff's recommendation, but I hope that all parties concerned just focus on getting this done rather than endless lobbying and endless wasting energy on lobbying, rather focus the energy on getting things done. Okay, who can support the staff's recommendation? And I think we'll do it in two different parts. So first for 17. The...
17.
14.
And then who agrees that the two standards should remain aligned?
1 year deferral.
Huh?
1 year deferral.
Yeah.
13.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay.
We'll see you next month.
Yeah, let's just take a 5 minute break.